Are you ready, Alabama?
Oh, the band is out on the field!
The band is leaving the field.
And one time, at band camp,
love the drum.
Man, I do love my drum.
You say that's what she said one more time, I'm gonna pop you.
You're welcome to join the doghouse.
Oh God, I'm so sorry, I keep doing that.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
Be a dog.
The clock starts on my whistle.
How you doing?
It's time for the second half of the Tom Abraham Show. Here he is, the head of the household. Here's drum major Big Dog. It's Tom Abraham.
We strong.
You all may be taking the week off, right, this week, but I'm not.
Good start, second half of the Tom Abraham Show. Throwback Thursday in the doghouse. Featuring Elvis Presley, Baby Let's Play House, which was a song written by Arthur Gunther back in 1954. It was covered by Elvis Presley in 1955 and released by Sun Records. It was the fourth album that was put out, a record that was put out by Elvis Presley. The first three had done nothing. This one was the first to hit the charts. It did it this week in 1955, number five on the country charts, at Billboard country charts. So Elvis Presley in the hot seat this week as we use all Elvis Presley music to bump the show, not at the top of the hours, but you know what I mean, to bump the show throughout the show as well. Joining us now, Matt Scalise from AL.com, who will, of course, AL.com will be a huge presence coming up next week as we all gather for SEC Media Days. Matt, welcome in. How are you?
It's almost here again.
It's almost here a week early, man. I mean, it was funny because I was talking to a guy today, and they were talking to me about doing some things and, you know, want me to do some stuff for SEC Media Days for another one of our affiliates. And they're like, the only thing is we didn't realize it was, like, already here, that it was next week. They were at a station in Georgia, and they're like, when is Georgia going? I go, Tuesday, like next Tuesday. And they're like, really? And I'm like, yeah, it's here. And it's just kind of weird being this early.
Yeah, I think it got moved around a little bit because some of the other leagues have moved their media days around a little bit. But, you know, I think having it earlier is not the worst thing. I was talking about this with Lauren Sisler in the office today, just about how this isn't an event where big news breaks like it used to a few years ago. And I really think a lot of it has to do with the fact that there really isn't an off season for coverage of this stuff. I mean, there's not going to be any big news that they could surprise us with spring on us at this event because we're covering and reading about and following these teams 365 days a year now. So, you know, to me, this event eventually, I think, makes sense as kind of a mid off season event, just as something to bridge the gap rather than as the big preseason kickoff, because we all know each of these coaches are going to individually have their own press conferences again once fall camp starts in a few weeks after this.
Right. Well, the newsy thing, and we talked about this before, Destin really is more apt to be news now.
Absolutely, yeah.
Than this. But I think people, the interest level in this is more to hear, you know, what the different coaches and players say on the different outlets and so on, and the convention aspect of it. I know from our coverage, it's as much now, because of the fact that there's not going to be a lot of news that comes out of it, it's as much now for the various media to visit with other media. It's our chance where we talk to some of the national guys, some of the TV guys, along with some of our regular guys that we talk to, but in a setting that is almost like a convention, and we try to convey that this is the kickoff of the SEC season, and there's a lot of predictions and projections that are being done. I think that's one of the biggest things about this is the predictions that come out of it.
I think that is how most people who are there use it. I think you do have still some kind of older school type of media outlets, some small local papers that still have a print section every year that they've got to fill out and sell to their sponsors. But for the most part, the bigger outlets and the more modern outlets that are at this thing, they're using it as an opportunity to meet with and network with other journalists. And that is primarily what goes on over the course of this week. You hear it often described by people as this kind of, summer camp for SEC football writers. And that really is what it is. It is, there's a lot more time spent with journalists talking to other journalists than there is journalists talking to football coaches or players. That is sort of the backdrop for it, but we're all there to meet with each other and help each other out with content and appear in each other's shows. And that's kind of, I think, where what most people attending this thing are going to be doing all week is making new relationships and getting phone numbers and talking to other people in the media.
No question about it. Matt Scalise with us from AL.com. And the other aspect, of course, is the athletes, and it is good to talk to some of the athletes and from our vantage point in the spoken word to be able to hear them speak and hear how polished a lot of these guys are. I was a little bit surprised. I know he's a true sophomore, but he's the defending SEC Player of the Year, that Jalen Hurts isn't going. I was kind of surprised. That might be an underclassman kind of thing. Certainly Bradley Bozeman, who's a senior, Minka Fitzpatrick, a junior, and Cal Ridley, a junior, are all worthy guys to represent Alabama. But there are other true sophomores going, right? Shea Patterson will be there, the sophomore quarterback from Ole Miss. Jake Bentley will be there, the sophomore quarterback from Carolina. I was a little bit surprised. I don't know if there was a reason given at all or not, but I was a little bit surprised that Jalen Hurts isn't going to be there. He's a well-spoken guy, and he's certainly a great representative of the university.
I don't even know if Jake Bentley's old enough to vote yet. But I
know.
I'm not that surprised that Jalen Hurts is not going, to be honest, and I think it fits with the pattern that Nick Saban has always had. I know Jalen Hurts does kind of break the mold in a lot of ways for Alabama, but Nick Saban kept the same policies on Jalen Hurts that he's always had. He was the starting quarterback last year, but we still did not ever get to talk to him until Alabama had no choice but to make him available, and that's holding true with Nick Saban's policy that he's always had, that true freshmen do not talk to the media. So, I think when you look at how Nick Saban has handled media days, it's typically treated as a reward for seniors or guys that are probably going to be leaving after this year, third-year guys that are almost certainly headed to the NFL early. And that's what he did again this year. He's got an upperclassman offensive lineman coming. He's got a safety that's a senior, and he's got a wide receiver that a lot of people believe is probably gone after this year. So it really is keeping in the pattern of what Nick Saban wants to do. I think it's not that they don't trust Jalen Hurts. I think it has a lot more to do with the fact that this is viewed as a privilege and an opportunity that has to be earned with seniority at Alabama. We are going to see Jalen Hurts get in front of the media a lot more this year, and I think he's done a great job down the stretch. We talked to him after the Peach Bowl and after the SEC Championship game and of course after the National Championship game. I thought he handled himself exceptionally well after about as disappointing a loss as you can possibly undergo, and he kept his cool in that very, very heated locker room after the National Championship game, and I think that bodes well for him as a media guy going forward in the locker room and in the media room.
Auburn sending, interestingly, Daniel Carlson, a kicker. I don't know that – I don't can't remember a kicker being – can you remember a kicker several years? Have you remembered a kicker representing one of your schools?
I actually think Auburn may have sent a kicker before. But it's – look, we don't see a lot. And there was kind of a lot of national shoulder shrugging about it and almost mocking it of saying, Auburn's so boring, they're going to send their kicker immediately. This is a little bit different of a situation. Daniel Carlson is an exception when it comes to kickers for a lot of reasons. Number one, he's probably the best place kicker in the country. He probably has been for a couple of years now. He's almost certainly a guy that NFL teams are going to strongly consider using a draft pick on when he ultimately comes out. So, he is a big-time player. And, look, there are games that Auburn flat out would not have won. 1 without Daniel Carlson last year. And I'm not talking about some kind of last-minute kick. He was the only guy that scored any points against LSU last year, and Auburn won that game. He is a huge part of what Auburn does offensively. And I think he's also going to be leaned upon as a guy, believe it or not, in some off-field capacities. You know, I think he's a guy they depend on, and he's a guy they rally around, and that he's well-liked on the team. And obviously he's been a huge part of just what they do. He shapes their offensive philosophy, I think, in a lot of ways. So it is an exception. This is not just a case of Auburn didn't want to send anybody interesting, so they sent their kicker. This is a major player for them.
Well, I know Auburn has a kicker there every year. El Del Greco will be there, you know what I mean, with jocks.
That's right.
So I guess that's the Auburn kicker, and I know that it's gone there. I don't know about others. But interestingly enough, let's say that Alabama had sent J.K. Scott. I mean, I'm a special teams coach from back in the day, and to me, the punt is the most important play in football. A lot of coaches say that. Some of it say it as lip service, but, you know, there's a lot of real estate at stake there. J.K. Scott, some people think, could possibly be a draft pick and maybe the best punter in the nation this upcoming year. If Alabama had sent J.K. Scott, on the one hand, you'd say, well, that makes sense. He'd be a fourth-year punter. On the other hand, you'd say, really? They sent the punter? So, you know, I could see that being weird.
Well, and also the other thing, look, it really does come down to the individuals, you know. Mm-hmm. And I love talking to J.K. Scott. We don't get to do it very often, but he is a very unique individual with a personality that stands out. And we don't, you know, unfortunately, schools don't put those guys out there in front of us very often because they want us to get, you know, predictable, kind of bland answers. They don't want us to get something that could be misconstrued or you know, something that the school doesn't feel like they have total control of the message. They don't like putting guys out in front of us that aren't going to say canned, predictable things. I wish that wasn't the case. I wish schools trusted these kids a little bit more to just be themselves in front of us because, you know, the fans love that, and we certainly love telling those stories too. But, you know, I think Daniel Carlson for Auburn makes a little bit more sense just because he's so experienced. And I think they've always been comfortable putting him out in front of the media during the season, too. And Auburn is a school that is pretty much as restrictive as it gets when it comes to who they let us talk to during the season. And Carlson is always the guy they've trusted to do that.
Matt Scalise with us, AL.com. Both Alabama and Auburn will send offensive linemen, Bradley Bozeman from Alabama, and Braden Smith from Auburn. And in fact, to that point that you just made about the message, carrying the message, fully 8 of the 14 teams are sending offensive linemen. It's the position that is most, even more offensive linemen than quarterbacks are going. And there are a lot of quarterbacks this year going. But you always see that. These guys always seem to be very intelligent guys, well-spoken guys. And maybe some of it is also, you know, as much as it'll be fun to have Nick Chubb and Sony Michel there, the two star running backs from Georgia, you know, having all these offensive linemen there, these are guys that maybe don't get a ton of spotlight. And, you know, when Coda Martin shows up from Texas A&M and Jason Robertson from Tennessee and the rest of the offensive linemen that are going to be there, you know, it's I think, a two-pronged thing. One, the message that they bring, and two, a little bit of a reward for them for doing the dirty work.
No question. You want them to have high morale on the offensive line. I hate to profile people by the position that they play, but I do think there's something inherent in playing offensive line that requires a level of discipline and a level of, you know, sticking to the plan, cooperating, you know, being a team guy. And I don't mean to say that those values are not a part of playing defensive line, but I think maybe you tend to get personalities from those positions that are maybe a little bit more aggressive, a little more emotional, a little bit more willing to kind of freelance with their opinions and their answers to questions. And that's probably why we don't see as many defensive linemen. I know for me personally, I have that rare opportunity at a bowl game where I get to talk to any players I want, I go to defensive linemen right away, and I'm very rarely disappointed because I get pretty interesting quotes out of them. which is exactly what schools don't want me to have as a media member. So that's probably why we see a lot more offensive linemen than defensive guys at SEC Media Days.
Matt Scalise, AL.com. We're talking about you hate to profile players by position. Have you never heard of the brick wall test that coaches always used to use back in the day? I mean, if a player runs in.
Coaches definitely do it, yeah.
You have set up a brick wall. If a player runs into the brick wall, falls down, runs into the brick wall, falls down, runs into the brick wall, falls down, that's an offensive tackle. If he jumps over the brick wall, that's a defensive end. If he runs through the brick wall, that's a linebacker. If he goes around the brick wall, that's a running back. Are you kidding me? I mean, we always profile players by their position. It's the way you do.
Yeah. I think there's always exceptions to it. But I think for the most part, this is where you start to see hopefully who the guys are that we're probably going to be seeing as the leaders in the media room and in the post-game locker room for the rest of the season. We're probably not going to get a whole lot of outrageous quotes at SEC Media Days because those aren't the guys that the schools like to put on display for us. So you can judge a little bit from who isn't here today as well. But I think these are the guys that the schools are going to be looking to as kind of the guys that carry the message forward through the season and probably somewhat to be leaders in the locker room, too, for the team.
Yeah. My colleague Cole Kublik will be beating on my studio door in a minute. What do you mean? Fall down, hit brick wall, fall down. It's offensive. What we mean by that is the resilient guys. They fight, they battle, they get,
right.
I mean, they get up. They, you know, they, that's what that means. It's not a bad thing. I don't mean that as a bad thing. All right. I tried to catch up. I was off for 11 days, longest period of time I've ever taken off, 19 years on the radio. But with the holiday, the way it felt, I was off for 11 days. So I covered a lot of things in the last couple of days to get caught up. And one of them is the story that you guys did a great job covering with California adding Alabama to the list of banned travel states. Now 8 states that California won't fund state monies for travel to. It doesn't sound like it'll affect the Fresno State game in Tuscaloosa because that was already booked before the ban went into play. But it's kind of crazy. When you look at the various states, it seems like, you know what, these states – These are not unreasonable things that they're putting in play, especially what, you know, we did in Alabama as far as the reasoning why. And it just seems odd that one state won't respect the rights of another state, but, you know, the other states respect the rights of California to do what they want to do. And it doesn't, you know, it seems not to mesh. And you wonder at what point in time could this really become an issue? The Final Four this year in football is Louisiana, California, and Georgia. So I guess right now those states are okay. I don't even know where all the regionals are in basketball. But at some point in time, this is going to impact people because I think there's another 8 states that are coming that are going to have laws in place that California is not going to like pretty soon.
Well, look, this isn't entirely dissimilar to what happened in North Carolina where the NCAA actually did boycott that state for a law that they passed. You know, We're in a time right now where our country is very divided on the political spectrum, and I think this probably isn't going to have any impact in the short term. I mean, I know it's not going to affect Alabama's game with Fresno State, but I think because Alabama is not hosting, NCAA championship type events right now, it's probably not going to be much of an impact on that either. But going forward, at some point, I think this political climate we're in could certainly have an effect on college sports. These are ultimately state-controlled institutions, and they're spending, you know, state-controlled money to go to these athletic events. So because of that aspect of it, because these are not NFL teams, these are not privately owned sports institutions. These are funded by government money and controlled by, you know, state employees. This is going to be a factor in college sports going forward. It's already been a factor in the state of North Carolina. At some point, it's probably going to affect college sports at a larger level. We're not there right now. I don't think this is any kind of impending crisis. But if we keep heading down this path where we are continuing to be unwilling to accept the way that other people want to do things in their part of the country,
yeah.
I think we're gonna continue to head down a road where it starts to impact lots of things well beyond college sports.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no question about it that you guys did a good job with the story. It's a delicate story, but it's one that has to be told, and it always has an emotional response. We've had several emotional responses to it today on the show, you know, as I went through it, and you know, most of them are, you know, I mean, it's the United States. I mean, I just think out of respect across the board, and it's going to be very interesting. You know, most people will respond with, you know what, stay in California then. You know, why don't you become your own country, become your own people. One guy said put firecrackers and dynamite in the San Andreas Fault and blow them off the edge of the country. That would be a little severe, but you understand how something like that would create passion, especially when the majority of the states are in the Southeast, and it's going to continue to probably be that way.
I think that at a certain point, look, there have been lots of social issues like this that have been dealt with via boycott over the years. That's the California is not inventing that. People have boycotted states and cities that have passed laws or have policies that they don't agree with for a long time. That's been going on for a long time. There's one of two ways it's going to go. Either at some point it fundamentally alters the way that we arrange football games and college football here, or the Supreme Court is going to pass a law and say that Alabama is not allowed to do what they're doing, and then it's all over with. But I don't think you're going to see Alabama back down too hard on a law that they've passed here. And just like North Carolina, ultimately, they backed down a little bit, but a lot of people would say that it was, you know, just barely enough of a compromise to get the boycott lifted from the NCAA. So I don't think you're going to change too many people's minds in this part of the country with a college sports boycott, because I don't think that it's making an impact. Like you said, there's always other teams that are willing to play you. I think the only way this is going away really is if somebody from a higher level of government says this law can't exist anymore.
Yeah. Well, it will be interesting to see. Even with the North Carolina, the way they changed it, that satisfied the NCAA, but not California. They left North Carolina on the list. And every state has a little bit of a different reason. Kentucky's is different than Alabama, different than South Dakota. You know, whatever they are, they each have a rule. And it's a dangerous precedent, I think, for a state like South Carolina to do, or like California to do, because what's to stop other states from saying, okay, we're not going to Washington because they have legalized dope? You know, who knows? Whatever the reason may be, it becomes a really, you know, something that will really fraction the states that are united. But you know, in any event, that's a whole other conversation. All right, man, I will see you next week. We'll be bumping around. We'll have the Bankston Motorhome rig out in the parking lot. We'll be staying right there the whole time at SEC Media Day, so I'm fired up about that and fired up about seeing you and all your crew.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing you. Just we'll have our traditional full row taken up in the big ballroom, and holler at us. You got the whole AL.com crew at your disposal.
Beautiful. It's good stuff, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Matt Scalise, AL.com. All right, you asked for it, so you get it. When we return, the infamous, now nearly 20-year-old, rules for dating the big dog's daughter. Look, I've got five daughters. They're all, I think, how many of them are married? 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 are already married, and 1 is 23. My baby girl is 23 with a boyfriend now. But they all lived under these rules. All of the boyfriends, going all the way back to Jordan Chirico, when my oldest daughter was 13 years old and went on her, well, it wasn't a date, 14 years old and went on her first date. Rules to live by when we return. 7:30, 103.9, yeah.
Wipe your paws. It's time to enter the doghouse.
Wise men say only fools rush.
Elvis Presley Day on a Throwback Thursday. Welcome back, Tom Abraham Show.
But I can't.
All right, speaking of throwbacks, many of you responded, and T-Mac, you'll have a little girl someday, right? I mean, at some particular point in time, you are going to have a little girl. And you are going to have to put down some ground rules that are timeless. Cream, you too. I know you're only 19 years old. But that day, believe it or not, Cream, there's a woman out there for you. I'm just saying. There may be.
That was
could
funny.
Happen. Yeah, I mean, it could happen. And then there's, next thing you know, it'll be a little girl. And if you, and for those of you that are listening that have daughters, you know from which I speak. Now, when I first went on the radio in 1997, my oldest daughter at the time was 17 years old. Okay? She is going to be 37 now this fall because I've been on the radio coming up pretty near 20 years. But she was 17 at the time. And one of the first things I did when I got on the air, you got to remember, I had coached for a while. I had coached high school football at the school that my daughters went to. They had a hard time dating. My daughters are beautiful. Those of you that have seen pictures know my daughters are all beautiful. But they had a hard time dating because, you know, guys didn't want to come near our family. I don't know why, but they had a hard time dating. So, I feel that it is necessary for me to share with you the rules that I have utilized over the past 20 years for dating my daughters. Rule number one. You pull into my driveway and honk the horn, you better be delivering something because you sure as hell aren't picking up my daughter. Rule number two, do not touch my daughter in front of me. You may glance at her, so long as you do not look at anything below her neck. If you cannot keep your eyes or hands off my daughter's body, I will remove them. Rule number three, I am aware that it is considered fashionable for boys of your age to wear their trousers so loosely that they appear to be falling off their hips. Please do not take this as an insult. But you and all of your friends are complete idiots. I want to be fair and open-minded about this issue, so I propose a compromise. You can come to the door with your underwear showing and your pants 10 sizes too big. I will not object. However, to ensure that your clothes do not, in fact, fall off during the course of your date with my daughter, I will take my electric nail gun and fasten your trousers securely in place to your waist. Aren't you glad you didn't date one of my daughters?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Rule number four. I'm sure you've been told that in today's world, sex without utilizing a, quote, barrier method of some kind can kill you. Let me elaborate. When it comes to sex and my daughters, I am the barrier, and I will kill you. Rule number five. It is understood that in order for us to get to know each other, we should talk about sports and politics and other issues. Please do not do this with me. The only information I require from you is an indication of when you expect to have my daughter safely back at my house, and the only answer I need is early. Rule number six. I've got no doubt that you're a popular guy, and you have many opportunities to date other girls. And that's okay with me as long as it's okay with my daughter. Otherwise, once you've gone out with my little girl, you will continue to date no one but her until she is finished with you. And if you make her cry, I will make you cry. Clear? Is it clear enough?
These are great. I'm so glad we decided to do this.
Rule number seven. As you stand in my front hallway waiting for my daughter to appear, and an hour goes by, do not sigh, do not fidget. If you want to be on time for the movie, don't be dating. My daughter's putting on her makeup, and that could take longer than painting the Golden Gate Bridge. Instead of just standing there, do something useful like changing the oil in my car, okay? Give you something to do while you wait. Rule number eight. The following places are not appropriate for a date with my daughter. any place where there is a bed, a sofa, or anything softer than a wooden stool, anywhere where there is darkness, places where there is dancing, holding hands, or happiness, places where the ambient temperature is warm enough to introduce my daughter with shorts or a tank top or a midriff t-shirt or anything other than overalls or a sweater or a goose down parka zipped up to the throat. Movies with a strong romantic or sexual theme are to be avoided. Music, movies with chainsaws, okay. Hockey games, okay. Old folks homes, better.
I love how, like, happiness is absolutely prohibited.
Prohibited. Rule number 9, do not lie to me. I may appear to be a pot-bellied, balding, middle-aged, dim-witted has-been. But on issues involving and relating to my daughter, I am the all-knowing, merciless God of your universe. If I ask you where you are going and with whom, you have one chance to tell me the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Because I got a shotgun, a shovel, and 5 acres behind the house. Do not trifle with me.
I love it. That needs to be, like, laminated.
Yeah. I can't believe it was on top of my old show stuff list. I'm like, man, can I find? I said this to these guys. I haven't rolled this list out since May of 2004. I got a note written on it. May of 2004 was the last time this list was heard by anybody.
Well, growing up, I was always a super respectful person, which didn't translate to being popular with women at all growing up in high school, when it didn't help that I wasn't the best looking cat either. Rolling around, but I mean, it works out for the best. I mean, you find someone who likes that kind of stuff, and I lucked out. You know what I mean? I got, you know, blonde little bombshell that just happens to like being treated right. So
I hope she's listening, because she's gonna have daughters too. All right, this is the final rule.
Oh my,
the most important rule: be afraid. Be very, very afraid. It takes very little for me to mistake the sound of your car in the driveway for a chopper coming in over a rice paddy near Hanoi. When my Agent Orange starts acting up and the voices in my head tell me to start cleaning the guns as I wait for you to bring my daughter home. As soon as you pull in the driveway, exit the car, both hands in plain sight, speak the perimeter password, announce in a clear voice that you brought my daughter home safely and early, then get in your car. There's no need for you to come inside. Because that camouflage face in the window is me!
So what's the password? Does it change?
What changes by day?
Yeah. Okay. Just remember to forward that to me if I ever end up having to, you know, come over for whatever reason.
I need to commit that to some electronic type of document.
Yeah.
I have had that. Literally, it was one of the first things that I ever did back in the late 90s when I first went on the air. And that has been introduced now in, the last time I did was May of 2004. So that would have been here. That would have been in Huntsville. All right. I've never used it in Nashville. But by then my daughters are all pretty much grown up and, you know, it's a different deal. But use this the better part of, this was in New York. I used this in New York, Florida, Huntsville. Not in Nashville. Probably not in Nashville. So anyway, now you guys have heard it. So there you go. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I do.
It was fantastic. Yeah. Very insightful. How many boyfriends have you read that to or handed a copy?
Well, a lot of them had heard it on the air. So.
Do you ever recite that at football practice since you coached at the high school?
Yeah, and the really key ones in there, I don't need. I mean, I've got them all written down here, right? They're all written down. They're modified from, you know, other things that I've seen and so on that I've adopted. But for the most part, they, you know, the ones that are key, I can get the point across without getting through 10 of them. I mean, I have certain, you know, there have been certain guys, I can tell there are guys I don't say nothing to. I mean, back in the day, there were guys I wouldn't say anything to because I could sense that they were relatively harmless. You know what I mean? And yeah. There are other guys that I can tell, the guy that's like me, you know, the alpha male type of guy that I need to, and usually there's, you know, I mean, I told one guy that I cut his testicles off and feed them to him if he put it laid a hand on my daughter.
Nice.
It's a true story, though. I had daughters that and when I first wrote all of that up, I actually had 5 acres behind. I don't have 5 acres behind a house anymore. The 5 acres behind a house is a cemetery. You know, I mean, it's a Confederate cemetery here in Winchester.
Isn't there like a construction site like a mile or two from your house going on?
Well, yeah, Twin Creeks is going on about a mile or two from here, and that's going on over there. But you know, when I first put a lot of that together, I actually had I had 5 acres behind my house. You know, but anyway, it's a lot of fun. But you know, I mean, here's the thing, and I'll be serious for a minute here. There are a lot of guys out there that don't grow up with a male influence. It happens. There are a lot of guys that nowadays don't grow up with a male influence. Forget a father. They don't even have a father figure. So, you know, there are guys that don't have daddies around, and then there are guys that don't have daddies around that don't play sports, that don't have a coach that's a father figure to them. There are guys. And I'm going to say this, no disrespect for dudes that get raised by mom or grandma. I get it. I understand it. And they do a great, great job. Single mothers do a tremendous job and a thankless job raising boys. But it wasn't designed to be that way. And doesn't work. Ultimately, it doesn't work. It takes a man to raise a man. There's a saying, it takes a man to be a father. And there's a lot of truth to that. I hate it for those women that are out there that are trying to be mommy and daddy to a boy. You just can't do it. You just can't do it. And it makes it very, very difficult. And I've come across guys that have had very, very little, no older brother, no coach, no pastor, no man involved in their life. And they don't learn the ways of being a guy, whatever those ways are. You know, what some people would think, you know, moms a lot of times are very overprotective. You know, dad lets some things go. Dad has to let some, because he knows dad's got to know that there are certain things that need to be done in the process, in the process of a boy becoming a man that mom doesn't like. And that's just the way it is. And if it's just mom, then, you know, that's what you're going to get. And I've said it over and over again. The biggest problem in our country is a lack of fatherhood. That's the biggest problem in this country right now, is women raising men. The lack of fatherhood. Sperm donor dads, all right? And moms who have the responsibility to take up and try and do everything. Some have been successful. Some kids have grown up in that scenario and have ended up very successful. And if you're one, God bless you. You're lucky. But I'm going to tell you right now, it takes a man to be a father. And that's a father of daughters as well as a father of, you know, of boys. I mean, you don't have to be their best friend. You know, being a father and being a buddy are two different things, two completely different things. Not our job to be buddy-buddy with them. It's our job to set the path, to blaze the path, and give them some kind of direction. That's our job. Down the road, you know, they'll get it or they won't, but that's all you can do. All right, I'm getting off my soapbox. Let's get a break. Open lines when we return. 866-485-9867. 866-485-9867. It's the Tom Abraham Show. Back with more after this on 730-1039. Yep.
Sports Radio 730 and 1039. The Ump.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog. You're crying all the time. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. You're crying all the time. Well, you ain't never caught a rabbit and you ain't no friend of mine. Well, they said,
well,
you was
this,
high class. Well, that was just a lie.
Yeah, they said, you know, poll question up. Arkansas and Notre Dame have agreed to a home and home in football, 2020 and 2025. Got me thinking, will either Brett Bielema or Brian Kelly be the head coaches when Arkansas and Notre Dame play in 2020? Forget 2025. So we put that up as our poll question today. None of you so far think that both will be the head coaches when that game comes. 83% think that neither will be the head coach, and 17% are saying that Bielema will be there. Nobody thinks that Brian Kelly will be there. And it's interesting because Brian Kelly is, according to many, firmly in the hot seat for this upcoming season. In fact, Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports says that Brian Kelly and Kevin Sumlin have the two hottest seats in all of college football. He gave it to, you know, he had two guys listed in the hottest of hot seats, the five rating. This is the win or be fired category. Win or be fired. He had two guys in that category last year. Both guys got fired and replaced. This year he has two guys, Kevin Sumlin and Brian Kelly. Now, what does win mean? 10 games? 8 games? 9 games? I mean, Kelly was 4-8 last year. If he goes 8-4, is he good? 7 years in now. He has taken Notre Dame to a national championship game, even though he probably didn't belong there. Kevin Sumlin is just a master at a 9-win season. I mean, he'd be great if they were playing, you know, if the season ended in October. He'd be fantastic. He's always 6-0, 5-0, 6-0. He has 15 coaches rated a 3, which is pressure is mounting. Gus Malzahn, interestingly enough, on that list. He has 4 coaches listed as a 4, which is the next highest level, where they have to start improving now or they'll be out. He's got Rich Rodriguez at Arizona and Todd Graham at Arizona State in that category. The other guys that he has in that category with a 4, I'm looking down at the list. He's got Paul Haynes at Kent State, and he did all 120 or 130 Division I schools. So it's going to be some random guys on here. But he has Paul Haynes, and he has Cliff Kingsbury, who is at Texas Tech. Kingsbury is 24 and 26 in 4 seasons there at Tech. So he has him in that on that list as well. So Butch Jones, he has as a 2, which is pretty secure. 0 is your Nick Saban-esque, you know, untouchables. 2 is fairly secure. 3 is where it gets sketchy. Is Butch Jones more secure than Gus Malzahn? I don't know. I would think that Gus Malzahn is at least as secure as Butch Jones, isn't he? Got Will Muschamp in a pretty secure situation. Of course, he's only going into his second year. He's got Hugh Freeze in a pretty secure situation. We know what might happen there. I don't know that that's the case. All right, while I was digging up the 10 rules for dating my daughters, I came across something that's even older, from 2002. That was advice for my sons. Words women use and what they really mean. Do you want to hear it? I'll let you know at the top of the hour if you want. Somebody has to tell me you want to hear it. The words women use and what they really mean. On 730-1039, yeah.